We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's the True Faith Newcastle United podcast. You have Alex Hurst, Simon Campbell and Mick Martin. And it's a little bit of a bonus free True Faith podcast as we head towards the end of the season. Last game on Sunday and get into what we are going to talk about. We are live at the Stand Comedy Club on Tuesday. That's Tuesday the 24th. Myself, Charlotte will be there. Si, you might be there. You haven't confirmed yet. On stage with George Colton, Craig Hope and Mark Douglas. We're going to talk about this season, this ridiculous season that we've all witnessed, and look ahead to a quite ridiculous summer ahead in terms of anticipation. So come along. It'd be great to see everyone there. Already sold over 100 tickets. The Stand is a fantastic venue. £15 a ticket. No booking fee or anything like that. You'll find the link to buy tickets in the description to this podcast. So I'll see a few of you there on Tuesday, hopefully. Mick, we can't start without going back. We'll have a look back at Monday night. One of the great nights, and people are still talking about it 5 days on. Some discussion on social media under a few videos that we've done in YouTube when me and Charlotte called it the best night of our life. and people are saying, well, what about Barcelona? What about Juventus and all of these fixtures? What about David Kelly in 1992 or 91? And it's very hard for us to answer those questions, Mick. So I thought I'd ask you one because you can give some perspective for what it was like to be in the ground on Monday compared to those famous nights. First of all, what did you make of Monday night as a spectacle, as an atmosphere, and as an event?
So that's a very polite way of saying I'm old, Alex, and you wouldn't be wrong. No, I think Monday night was one. I would put it definitely in my top 10 greatest atmospheres at the club, without a shadow of a doubt. I think rather than kind of compare it to other great games that we've all been to, I would just say it was pretty unique in a lot of different ways, because clearly the flag display eclipsed anything that's been done previously at Newcastle, but I would say by anywhere in England, to be honest. I've seen some great displays in from Glasgow, from Celtic and Rangers, but I thought what the War Flags folks did on Monday night was exceptional, and that was unique. I think what was really, really great about it, and I've had this kind of thought for a while about the flag displays, is sometimes I think when the flag displays are over and people sit down, that's kind of the end of it, and we haven't been as noisy as we could have been. So I don't know if that's just me and my take, but and that's not to disparage what the people are doing with the flags by any stretch of the imagination. I think we all think it's brilliant. But what I noticed on Monday night was just how every part of St James's Park was singing. So, you know, I could hear chants starting from the Leasers, obviously. But even the corporate bit of the Millburn, I could see them all up towards the game. And can you remember when Bruno brought the ball out deep into the second half? I think we were winning 2-0 at that time. It might have been 1-0, rather. And he made the player play him, and then he went over and got a free kick. And the Millburn went up, you know, just in appreciation of how clever he had been. So I think it was really, really unique. It was marvellous. The scenes afterwards were fantastic. I'm still getting used to the idea of applauding directors of the club around the pitch. Like, I think that'll take some time for me to get used to, because of history of the McKeagues and Westwoods and Halls and Shepherds, and obviously dearly departed fat bastard of this parish. So unique. Yeah, I mean, for various different reasons, I've kind of loved being at St James's Park. You mentioned the David Kelly game that was '92, the League Cup semi final in '76 when they played Spurs at St James's. That was an unbelievable night. Barcelona, Juventus is special for me because I took my daughter to that game, one of the few games she's been at, and we still talk about it because she buzzes off seeing a old man go crazy. So, yeah, I think it was just a fantastic night. And I think what it demonstrates is that when this club is united from boardroom to the lads in the corner to the suits in the Millburn and the parents of the players, the boxers, etc., when we're all together, Newcastle United is a formidable place to come. And I think Arsenal shat it on Monday night. Had some good players there, but I just don't think they knew what was going on.
Totally agree. And yeah, it's one of the few times I've thought against a good team anyway that the crowd really had an impact on the result. Normally, when you play these sides with Man City come to St James's Park, the crowd can help, but you know, there's only so much you can do against top quality. But now we have some quality. Like you mentioned, that little, I don't know what it was, like a mid-air tackle from Bruno to nick the ball away from the lad he's about to shoot. It was like, you know, this is quality that we haven't seen in a long, long time at St James's Park. So just unbelievable side. There's been a lot of discussion about next season. Obviously, that was kind of a statement performance, wasn't it, from Eddie Howe's side, because we'd seen them do it in spells of games. We'd seen them do it in the first half against Palace, against Brighton in the first half, more consistently against Everton. But Do you think that's a little bit of a sign of next season, that kind of atmosphere, that kind of occasion, that kind of performance, like Mick says, everything marrying up? Or do you think that was, you know what, we played a decent team who had a shocker and it's a really good result, but that, you know, where does that performance rank for you in terms of like how realistic it is for this team moving forward?
Yeah, I think it was massive. We talked about it in the preview is what are we trying to get out of this game, because we had nothing to play for. And they had everything to play for. And it's interesting because the discussion kind of went towards if we tail off this badly as the season ends, it could have a knock-on effect on the next season. So it was very important that we got a result anyway, just so that we didn't end on a load of defeats. But I also said before that game that this is kind of indicative of where we are. If we can give Arsenal a game, we've already done it against Man United, West Ham, Chelsea, not so much Tottenham, but we basically have measured ourselves this season under Eddie Howe against that kind of second pack, if you like. All right, we didn't really lay a glove on Liverpool or Manchester City, but we've absolutely dominated Arsenal. We should have beat Man U at home. We should have got something at Chelsea away. And yeah, we'll beat West Ham, beat Wolves, beat Leicester, beat Brighton. And that's the top 10. So we have given all of those teams, we've taken points off most of them, and only Liverpool, Manchester City are out of sight at the moment. So that's a big thing for me, especially Arsenal going into their second last game of the season with Champions League football literally in their hands and us snatching it away with nothing to play for. If we can do that with nothing to play for, it bodes very well when we've got a whole season in front of us and something to play for. So yeah, I think that was massive. And I think it was a massive indication of where we could be and what the ambition is, not to just let that game go, because we didn't need to win it to say, well, you know what, we are here, we're going to play with the big boys, and this we might as well get started now. So yeah, absolutely think that was a huge result for so many reasons.
Mick, there's been national discussion on two levels about Eddie Howe. There's a discussion about him as manager of the season anyway, and a lot of people are unhappy about it. And then there was this friend of the show, Luke Edwards, led round of applause for Eddie Howe, probably in the post-match press conference, which seems to have really upset some of his national colleagues. Do you think the kind of talking down of Howe from those people, saying, you know, fair, you know, this thing's doing a good job, but Newcastle are 12th, as we sit here and talk, and also he had money to spend, and also the squad was underperforming under Bruce. Do you think it comes from an analytical place, or is this how it's going to be now? Is this just all out war against every aspect of the club, the manager, the fans, the owners, the players? What's your take on that discussion?
From a certain section, there seems to be that kind of belligerence towards towards the club, isn't it? So, you know, in the last few weeks, we've had, obviously, what do you want to call him? Everyone's favourite idiot, Barry Glendenning from The Guardian, who's picking fights with fanzine people about what he thinks they should think about their club. You've also had Delaney and Panja, who've been having a pop at northeast-based journalists after the Chelsea game and how they were questioning Eddie Howe about football. I mean, just kind of try and get your head, wrap your head around all of this stuff. And then we've got Panja. Look, made a right tit of himself, didn't he? Saying, I can't remember Sir John Hall doing this, blah, blah, blah. And then being bombarded by photos of loads of pictures of John Hall on the pitch, wearing Newcastle shirts, etc. And if he'd asked, we could have shown him loads about fat bastard Ashley at Arsenal, you know, wearing the shirt, etc., etc. So, and then the latest one, obviously, was, I forget the fella's name now, is irrelevant to us, criticising the journalists for giving the manager a round of applause after a season's work. And Howe said, you know, we're a kinder team in this press room. And of course, he's right, you know, because they work in the same industry. They've got different objectives, etc. But they work in the same industry. They work cheek by jowl. And I just wonder what these people want. Do they want them to be completely at war with the club all of the time, which is not really, it would be a pretty unique state of affairs if that was the case. It doesn't happen at any other club. So, you know, I just wonder what's going on with a handful of journalists who I think are just a little bit ahead of themselves, self-regarding, pumped up, think they're something they're not, and want to kind of have this crusade against Newcastle United about the ownership. And like, look, the ownership has got its issues, and I share some concerns about those issues, but they're not the people to raise them, and I don't know who they think they are. And I actually think they're doing the cause that they purport to support an incredible amount of damage, because it's alienating our supporters. It's making us belligerent against them in particular, and they're getting nowhere with this kind of concern that they have about human rights in Saudi Arabia or anywhere else. And I don't think the proper organisations like Amnesty International would kind of welcome how they're behaving, because they're not really doing anything to project, you know, progress that cause, rather than just kind of make a name for themselves and turn stuff into news items. And there was no bigger example of that than the stuff around the third strip. You know, in the real world, who cares? What does it do? Is it sports washing? Well, I think that's overstated. I think it's probably commercially savvy, to think, to have a strip that might go down well in Saudi. But, you know, it's kind of one of these things. It doesn't really matter. And they're missing the big picture, which is, you know, there are concerns about human rights. But they just fail to, for me, I'm sorry I'm going on a bit, they fail to see the social, economic, cultural and security context which this country is in right now, and its relationships with Saudi Arabia, which go back decades. And to talk about sports washing, about a third strip, etc., I would say it does more for the image of Saudi Arabia when the monarch of that country rides up Pall Mall in a gold carriage and then meets the Queen at the end of a very, very long red carpet. So I just think it's all bullshit and noise and nonsense, and it doesn't do the cause that they're saying that they support, and the human rights that they deplore, like everyone does. It doesn't do it any good.
Well said, Si. Unless you want to come back to make anything.
No, he's absolutely summed it up very well. I daren't go against Mick on this one.
Then I'd say to you, Si, if we move on to a bit of a whistle stop tour of this podcast, we'll cover us here for some topics. You know, it's not going to be relevant that long because we'll play on Sunday. Si, we could finish between 14th and 10th this Sunday. Are you arsed? Does it matter? Does top 10 matter? Is this a very small step on a much bigger bigger picture, what's your thoughts on it?
Unsurprisingly, there's a yes and a no answer to this question, because for prestige, for the history books, it doesn't matter. The Premier League table for the last three or four seasons, there's been very little difference between basically 9th and 17th. You either don't get relegated and you finish in that pack, or you do get relegated, or you're in European contention. Everyone else is almost just other rounds. And in 10 years' time, no one will care that Newcastle finished wherever we do between 10th and, did you say 15th, whatever's possible. The Premier League is that, and it will be next season. There's a top two, maybe three, if Chelsea could keep their act together for an entire season. Then there's the next five, who are all in the shout of Europe, and then there's the bottom 12, you know, and we need to change that to progress as a club. So we need to either break into that eight, in my opinion, or higher. So on the flip side, financially, yes, I think you always remind everyone of this one. I think it's about an extra £2 million for every league place, which, given that there's lots of talk about financial fair play going on at the minute, every little helps in that regard. I also think we talked about this with Craig Hope a couple of weeks ago and on various other shows. I think it's important in terms of attracting players in the summer. I think even an 11th or 10th place finish is far more attractive to prospective players who maybe don't know an awful lot about Newcastle or the Premier League, below the top six or seven. A team that's finished 15th in the Premier League versus a team that's finished 11th. I don't know, maybe that just looks a bit more attractive to the next Bruno, who we might be trying to convince to come to Newcastle United. I think I would also like to see us finish as high as possible this season to rule out that idea that we need another season to consolidate. So if we finish 11th, 10th this season, we don't really need to waste another season doing that whole, oh, it'd be nice to avoid the relegation picture and then just finish 10th. If we're already finishing 11th after Steve Bruce mullered us for half a season, there's no point in finishing 10th again, in my opinion, because as I've just described, finishing 10th ultimately in the current Premier League doesn't mean a lot. So I think it's important that we finish the season strongly, finish so far away from the relegation picture that you wouldn't believe that we were even in it, so that next season the target is, and maybe that's going to make things more difficult for Eddie Howe and the team. It means we're already setting expectations a bit higher, but I think we have to. I think we should. For those reasons, it does matter. Although on paper, in the season 21-22, the league position isn't that important.
Makes sense. You're right. There's £10 million, actually. I think it's £2.5 million a position. So it's £10 million between 14th and 10th. I think, before I bring Mick in, I think it doesn't matter really that much apart from the money. Having said that, Eddie Howe and his team have been so good that it's another little thing ticked off, isn't it? Eddie Howe has had one season as a manager in the Premier League. He finished 9th with Bournemouth. He's had one top 10 finish. Would it be great for him to get another? The players will want to end on a high, so they're going to want to end as high up the table as possible. But also, to kind of counter that, do you remember last day of 2010-11? Pardew was in charge and we're 3-0 up at half-time against West Brom. If we'd held on to that, we would have finished 8th, as it was, finished 13th, so tight was the table. I think about the years that followed would have been no different if Newcastle had finished 8th that season. All it would have been is an extra string to Pardew's bow when people defended him in the media. That was literally all that would matter. So as much as I want to beat Burnley, and I'm kind of indifferent about who gets relegated, they're both close to us, so I wish neither were getting relegated. But I want to win and I want to finish in the top 10, but I think next season, whether Newcastle finish 14th or 10th, will be next season. And it will go the way it's going to go, regardless of how we finish. Mick, what do you think about this one? How arsed are you?
I'm always arsed. I want Newcastle to win football matches, and I think we will win on Sunday. I think we'll go there, and I think we'll beat Burnley. And I also think that's the right thing for us to have as our mindset, because there's the integrity of the Premier League to think about. English football is incredibly competitive. And I think every game has to be competitive, and we have to be fair on Leeds. So we have to give our best when we play Burnley, just like Brentford have to give their best against Leeds for Burnley. So in terms of the league position, I agree. I think we should, if we finish higher than where we are, and we're perhaps 10th or even 9th, it's possible, isn't it? You know, if we were to get to that point, I think that's a real feather in the club's cap. And it just, it's a mood changer, I think. So, you know, when we go out to try and sign players, and the more and more I think of it, the more I can't get my head around how Bruno Guimarães is a Newcastle player, given we signed him when we were bloody in the bottom three or something, or close to it. If we can say we're 10th and we can point to the upward trajectory that the club is on, then I think we're an easier sell to a certain category of player. So I do think it helps in that regard. The financials, not to be sniffed at as well, if it's a difference of 10 million quid, a hell of a lot of money, you know, we could sign a good player for that. If we're talking about target for 13 million, there's his fee sorted. So in the main. So I don't sniff at the money. I think the prestige of the club will benefit from being in that position. And likewise, we go into next season knowing that actually what we need to do is to replicate the points total of this season and add maybe 10, 15 points. And then we're in we're looking at perhaps top eight. And that is, I think that's where we're, the more I think about it, that's where we've got to be looking at next season, top eight.
Yeah. I think we'd have to win 19-0, Mick, to finish ninth. So it is mathematically possible, but 19-0 with Leicester losing. But
I'm hopeless with the data. I'm reminded that at work as well.
We can dream. Just a couple of final things on this. So yes, I think we're playing Burnley, who've still probably need a result. Just like Arsenal on Monday, I think it's really important that we continue to demonstrate that these games where everyone's rooting for the other team because they've got so much to play for and we're winning them, you know, in the games where it's scripted for the other team to get something to win, we're upsetting that. We're not just the team that everyone expects to beat. I think it's important to keep making that happen. And I had another point, but it's left me. So I just think there's so many reasons for us to keep winning games.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Burnley is another one that, for me, why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we try and win? I've remembered. I was gonna bring up Steve Bruce again. So if we win this game against Burnley, that's 49 points. So that would be 44 points just for Eddie Howe in the time he's been in charge. That's basically the same as Bruce got the last two seasons. You know, so matching that with 10 games less or 11 games less with a hamstrung team as bad as it was, it looks so good, and I would really like him to be able to say that and to be able to say that myself. So yeah, that's one last motivation, selfishly for me, another dagger in Steve Bruce.
It'll always be the great what if in summer 2019 when Newcastle have a riotous day in West London at Fulham on the River Thames, and you know, Newcastle's end of season form was so good, the weather was so good that day, the result, the performance, everything was great, and then it all, it pretty much from the final whistle, all went to shit from there, pretty much until the day of the takeover this season. And I just, you know, I'm going to the game, so I'm really, really hopeful of another, I don't think the weather's going to be quite as good, but another, you know, unbelievable away and unbelievable victory and day, and then it just, everyone just kind of bounces into the summer, which is going to happen anyway and be really positive. But Meg, I do like your point that the standard's been set. Eddie Howe has only lost games the only team he's lost to who you wouldn't describe as a good side this season are Everton. That's the only team. Yeah. All of the other sides, and I include Leicester. Leicester away is a hard game for anyone. The rest of the top six, that's it. So, it you know, he'll be aware of that. And to go and lose to a team like Burnley, who are a poor side, I don't think he would be happy with that. And I think it would take the end of the season from slightly so. You know, I think we'll go and win. I agree with you, Mick. I think we'll go and win. I think it'll be a good day. And if we can get 10th place and a few other results have to go our way, like you say, Si, you're heading into next season as a team already established in the top 10 of the Premier League. And going back to the argument, you know, the argument of someone like Miguel Delaney, who says that Howe's done a decent job, but the squad he inherited was mid-table and that they've basically performed to the level. Well, Newcastle have been the third best team in the Premier League since January. You know, the third best team in the Premier League should win at Burnley. And like I said, Monday night was a statement performance. And I think the country were a little bit shocked by that performance. It was on Sky. Now, all of a sudden, I've seen Jamie Carragher this week reference Newcastle as a potential top four contender. He wasn't doing that before Monday night because Newcastle hadn't beaten anyone. It hadn't beaten a good side. So, you know, I think you have to follow that up. And that's, we all have to get used to the new era and the new era of expectation. And that goes the same for the players and the manager.
Alex, I don't think you can take people like Delaney seriously anymore. I think they've cashed out in terms of being objective football analysts when it comes to Newcastle United. So having that kind of meanness of spirit towards Eddie Howe, just, you know, because of, you know, what they think the club is now, and they're entitled to think that, but when it comes to analysing the performance of coaches and footballers, that seems to me that they've kind of lost any credibility to be taken seriously. The fact of the matter is that in the time that Howe has been there, the players are fitter, they're more focused. Players who looked dead on their feet, shot to pieces. We wanted shot of them, and no more so than myself, the likes of Joe Linton, Shelby, Willick, Emil Kraft. They didn't look like footballers. They weren't fit. They weren't focused. And the other thing about that was our whole game plan was just to sit on the edge of the box and try and stop the other team playing. We were awful to watch. And on Monday night, we had loads of the ball. You know, we had more possession than Arsenal, who were really, you know, some extremely talented players in that Arsenal side. And I think if you had put somebody down who didn't know the league and said, which one of these teams is going for fourth and which one of them is 14th currently, I think they would have picked Newcastle as being the fourth best team.
Totally agree. Let's finish the show by talking about tickets. This might not apply to everyone listening because you might not be in the United Kingdom, you might not go to games, you might have a season ticket already, and you and all your mates might have season tickets, so you're fine. But I can tell you personally, and at the Newcastle United Supporters Trust, we are inundated with fans desperate to know what the situation is with season tickets next season. Not just season tickets, tickets in general. It is a massive source of anxiety for a lot of people. The club, I assume, are going to release something on this soon. In fact, I think they put a communication out yesterday saying they were going to, you know, let fans know what's happening. Obviously, we are still in this season. So most Premier League clubs probably discuss next season's tickets after this season is over. What I want to talk to you two about is how it should be, in your opinion, and what might happen next. Because I don't think it's an exaggeration to say Newcastle could sell an extra 20,000 season tickets. The demand is there. Even me, and I have no influence on anything, the amount of emails, DMs, WhatsApps I get from people who I might have communicated in the past about the pledge scheme or something. Can you help us out with a season ticket? How do I get a season ticket? Are they going to do it on purchase history? Do you have to queue up at the box office to get it? Are they going to release it? And you know, because this is an interesting conversation for you to make me and you a season ticket holders. Si, you're not. Si, if I start with you, mate, I assume you want a season ticket this summer. You know, what's your thoughts on it? And do you think that the big question is, should they just go to everybody, or should there be a priority for people who had a season ticket and gave it up at some point in the Ashley era? What, after you tell us if you want a season ticket or not, what's your views on that? Which is the big question, I think, for a lot of fans.
Yeah, of course I do. And you're all welcome for that. Me and 10,000 others gave up our season tickets when Steve Bruce got the job and made all of this possible. Look,
Ashley was going to say no to 305 million quid, wasn't he? If you were at last night.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. He was worried about the long-term prospects of not taking that deal because of the 10,000. No, look, it's a very, very difficult question to answer, because I don't want to come down. There's arguments for all of it. There's arguments that those people who walked away do have an affinity with the club, and there was negotiations with the sports trust as well about whether or not we could submit a list of those people and their loyalty points and all of that, and whether the new owners would consider that. I wouldn't be against that. I didn't even have that many loyalty points. It's not about the loyalty points for me. It's about whether or not I could even get a ticket for home games, because you're absolutely right. It's going to be difficult. How many seasons do you go back would then be the question, because there's people who walked away as soon as Ashley fell out with Keegan, and rightly so, some would say. And I think everyone was entitled to make the decisions they did, and I don't think that makes anyone less of a fan than the ones that kept going, in my opinion. So it is a very, very difficult question to answer, and hard to answer without someone feeling aggrieved or that it's not fair. And I totally understand the argument for all those people who kept going the whole time, that they're absolutely the first priority. Now, this is not enough. There won't even be 10,000 season tickets that you can give back to those people that just quit under Bruce. So I genuinely don't know how they solve this problem. I think there should always be a small number of tickets available for general sale, because you want kind of kids to get their first experience of the match. You want new people to come along. You don't necessarily want it to be a closed book, but equally, like you say, they could sell as many season tickets as needed, and those same people would turn up every week now. Whereas I think even the staunchest of people who kept their ticket the whole time would admit to letting other people take the ticket from time to time under Ashley. Those days are gone. If people are in Newcastle with their ticket, they're going to the game again. They're not seeing if anyone else fancies it. So yes, it's an important. Selfishly, I would like whatever system allows me to get my ticket back to be put in place. But I can totally understand why maybe just make it start afresh, give everyone a chance, make it a ballot, give everyone the opportunity, because I think there will be people there'll be 10 years worth of new fans who've just rekindled or just kind of discovered their love of Newcastle, who should have found that much, much earlier, but because of Mike Ashley didn't get a chance to fall in love with the club. And in the last 6 months, people who maybe have made it to their mid-20s without really giving a shit about Newcastle suddenly give a shit, and they're entitled also to get involved and be on that list of people who could get tickets. The solution is a bigger stadium, isn't it? It's going to have to be. And how they get to that solution, whether it is possible with St. James's Park or by moving it, I do not know, nor do I want to give an opinion on that, because that'll split people too. Ultimately, I don't think I've answered your question, because it's a very, very difficult question to answer.
It is a difficult question. That's why we're talking. Before I bring Mick in, just so people know as well, I believe that the waiting list for a corporate box at the club is now over 300 people. Now, if you consider that, like, no one, I assume, has given up a box, you know, good luck, lads, 300 years before you get into St. James's Park. In terms of the current rate of cancellations, corporate hospitality at the club has been a way for some people to get tickets if they're willing to pay a bit more than going through general sale. I believe, again, that there's a massive, you know, huge demand for corporate hospitality. It's not just season tickets. Prices are going up at corporate hospitality. And unlike season tickets, or there's been an argument, season tickets have gone up for some people. Mick, it is a difficult question. What do you think is the best way to approach this from the club's point of view? What do you think is fair?
Well, I think there's kind of short, medium and long-term answers to it, isn't there? So I think the long-term answer is what Si's just hit on, and that's increasing the capacity to match the demand. Excuse me. And whether or not that can be done on the current site of St. James's Park, or whether or not they have to move, is a moot point. None of us on this call are architects or engineers, but me having spent more time wandering around St James's Park, looking at it, and or practically touching it, caressing it, and kissing it from time to, over many, many years. I exaggerate, listeners. Then, knowing the site as we all do, I just find it very difficult to imagine how they can expand it in the way that they in the way that they need to. Strangely enough, I had a conversation with a lad I know on Monday night who I saw at half time, who I used to go to school with actually. So, you know, days of chalk and blackboards. And him and I were talking about what the capacity of the stadium might be. And I thought, I think that they needn't go any higher than 65,000. And he was kind of telling me I was talking rubbish, that it needed to be greater. So I had a friendly bit of banter about that. And then I've heard things this week, like Alex has just touched upon, with 300 boxes wanted from the Northeast. Remember that that number isn't 300 people, it's 300 boxes, which is probably more than the current number of boxes that they've got in totality. So it puts into in perspective the amount of corporate demand that there is. So I look at St James's Park and I think there's no way they can accommodate that on the current site, and it's so important for them to do that. So my view is, I was 65,000 capacity on Monday night at half time talking to me pal, and I'm kind of here I am on Friday evening talking about it, and I'm actually convinced that they need to go to 75,000, be bigger than Old Trafford, because they're 52,000 now, and they could sell, I think they could sell 13, 14, 15,000 season tickets in a week, additional to what they've got. That would take us up to 65,000. And then what we haven't got, which a lot of clubs have got, and I was down at Manchester a couple of weeks ago for the game at Man City, and that place is teeming with tourists. We know Arsenal's the same. We know West Ham's the same. And we haven't got that that level of support. And I think, in the 28-year-old of me would have hated myself for saying this, I think we need to bring that kind of level of support in as well, so that we can expand the support from within the region and across the country, and maybe from abroad as well. Well, that's the name of the game. So 75,000 all of a sudden doesn't sound so fanciful, does it? If we can sell 65,000 out in the region, in the Northeast, then I don't think it's fanciful thereafter. So that's the long-term one. The short-term solution, I think, is to not do what we did under Hall, when we exploded in under Kevin Keegan in 92-93 season, and just have a complete season ticket sellout. I think there needs to be tickets set aside for people to buy on a match day. And I also think they need to be more prescriptive about that and have a kind of a family, more family ticket related. So parents can take their children to Newcastle, and they might not get there every season, every game, but they'll get there occasionally, and they'll form that connection with the club, and that they should be in that scheme to do that. But I also think that people who should be at the front of the queue for tickets are those people who've had season tickets for many, many years prior to chucking them. And I think we all know people like that. Maybe that's you, Si, as well. Maybe you fall into that category. I know people who've done that, and a few lads in particular who I thought were Newcastle United through and through and all. But, you know, this season, the season before last, rather, just could not cope with what had happened with Rafa walking away. And remember, there was a campaign to encourage people to pack season tickets in. And it was never to leave the club, it was just to leave Ashley. So I think they should perhaps come into consideration to be front of the queue, and related to the years that they've had a season ticket prior, and they maybe should get first dibs. Medium term, I think if we're not able to accommodate everyone, I think there needs to be a membership scheme so that everyone gets a fair crack at it.
Yep, all interesting points. Before I give my view on the immediate and the short-term solutions, Your point about capacity is an interesting one. And this is what I've said to a few people this season who've laughed at me when I said I think Newcastle could go bigger than Old Trafford now. If you think Newcastle are selling out on Monday night against Arsenal at home, yes, it's the last home game of the season. But Newcastle don't advertise tickets. So Man City and Man United advertise their tickets on the radio, on national radio, because they have to let people know the game's going on to sell them. Newcastle, the only way to buy a ticket for Newcastle this season, you either have to be a pre-existing member, and I don't think they've sold memberships since before the pandemic. In fact, I know they haven't. Or you have to know a season ticket holder, which is pretty unfair if you think about it. I don't know how they've got themselves in that position, but you know, pandemic, sale of the club, Ashley being Ashley in the way around the club. But most football clubs, to say you have to know a season ticket holder pretty much, because there'll not be loads of members, would struggle to sell out grounds. So, you know, if Mick or Si, if you know someone, Si, if one of your mates doesn't know a season ticket holder and he wasn't a member in 2019 or 2018, there was simply no way to buy a ticket at St James's Park since the takeover. They've got to change that. That's too exclusionary. I also think they have to try and appreciate that younger people might not be in the financial position to buy tickets for something like 5 weeks in advance. And they probably won't do this because most businesses and football clubs, if they can sell the tickets, they just will. But also, I think back to when I was in my late teens, early 20s, and I worked shifts, and I didn't know what my shifts were going to be until the week before the match. So, you're completely excluding. I think a lot of people are currently excluded just through circumstance. And I think the club have got to work hard to recognize the only way we'll be able to grow is for young people, particularly new people. You know, I'm talking kids at the minute who might support Man City within the region, because Newcastle have just been so shit for so long. You know, loads of parents I've spoken to, and I don't know whether it's the same for you two, have said they found it really difficult to get their kid into Newcastle United because what selling points has there been apart from you were born here? You've got to give people a chance to go, and you don't want to be leaving it to get in a League Cup game or a friendly, which is not the same as a Premier League game. You don't want to attract these new people through success or through whatever we're going to do and also exclude them at the first time to the extent that they end up giving up. So I think that's really a really important point. That's away from season tickets. So they've got to, I think they should keep some tickets back for members and release 1,000 tickets, say, the week before the game. But whether they do that, I don't know. The season tickets problem, it's a nice problem for the club to have. The easy thing for them to do is just release them on general sale, because then you say everyone gets a shot, you don't upset anyone. Yes, people like yourself, Mick, and you've just argued size case there, many others. And there are a lot of people that I speak to who say the people who had season tickets for 10, 15, 20, 25 years, they deserve kind of a front of the queue, a bit like the loyalty point system. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how I've got our tickets for Burnley on Sunday, because we've been to more away games than other people. So I do understand the argument. Why shouldn't it apply for season tickets? You know, fair enough, good argument. But I also think there's a lot of young people who have only known Ashley and might not have wanted to get a season ticket, because it's been so easy to get tickets for games. The club have been doing a Sunderland in recent years with freebies. Freebies to students and schools and stuff like that. Freebies to 10,000 people under Steve Bruce before the pandemic. I also feel you don't want to just cut those people out completely, or people who might, you know, I mean, we're going back to Newcastle being any good, you know, 2011-12, they were all right under Rafa Benitez and spells, 2017, 2018, maybe a bit of 2019. You know, that's three to 5 years ago. There's a lot of people who were 16, 17, 18 then who might not have been in the financial position to have a season ticket. And if you just go back to, well, you needed to have a season ticket for 10 years to get a season ticket now, because there's going to be no more season tickets coming up next season. If you get in this summer, you're set for life, assuming all that, you know, happens that will want to happen in terms of the club's progression. And I just worry there's a lot of people who might be permanently locked out who didn't have the chance through age, through money, through circumstance to have a ticket before. It's a really, really hard one. I think they will just go for the easy option, which is general sale. Get yourself on that website at 10 a.m., queue up at the box office, you know, overnight. People will do that. If they release season tickets and you can get them from the box office, people will queue up overnight. I've no doubt about it whatsoever. I don't know if you just want to say, you know, come in on anything I've said there.
They're going to need like 35 more servers for that website to work if they do that. It'll kill it.
Yeah, it's a really, really difficult one, isn't it? When demand is so hard, and there will be, you know, I've articulated the claim, you know, similar to Si, which is about, you know, people who had previously had season tickets, and I'm thinking of two or three people that I know in particular who, you know, who've been going since the early 70s and had season tickets for over 35 years, who, you know, just got to the end of their rag with Bruce when Rafa left. With Ashley when Rafa left. And because they're friends of mine, good friends, I want them to come back to the match. And that's kind of maybe not the right mindset to be in. You need to be objective. It's very, very difficult. In the long term, I think the long-term solution has to be a bigger ground. And whether or not that's at St James's Park, we all want it to be at St James's Park for emotional and traditional reasons. But if it can't be there, then I think we have to bite the bullet. And I think the club has to think about moving to a new stadium where they can pull in 70,000-75,000, because that's where the demand is. And I think there are three mega clubs in this country who have massive support. Manchester United is one, clearly, and Liverpool is the other, and we're the third. I really do think that. I might put Arsenal into that picture as well, because they're the biggest club in London traditionally. And I know Spurs fans would be saying something different, and they'd have a good claim. They're a very well-supported football club. But I think the three mega clubs are us, Liverpool and Man United.
Totally agree. I think we'll leave it there then for this week. It's been a good chat, lads. Thanks very much for joining me. Thanks to everyone who listens. We'll be back with the free show after Burnley, probably on Monday night. Before then, you can hear more podcasts. You can hear the Match Day podcast from Burnley, plus maybe an instant reaction from me signing the lads on the way back from Burnley. Join us on Patreon for all of that. £6.60 a month. Remember, we're at the Stand Tuesday night, 24th, end of season live podcast talking. Join myself, George Culkin, Mark Douglas and Craig Hope for that. Tickets are £15. Find the link in the description of this podcast. Speak to you all soon. Ta-da.